This morning we gather to celebrate the enduring work of Pete Seeger. He left us earlier this year, but we celebrate his work as a banjoist, a singer, a rabble-rouser, an environmentalist, a lover of human beings, a labor organizer, an international ambassador of peace, a storyteller, a studier of folk stories, a singer. And he was the kind of singer who loved to sing, and he loved to sing so much that he wanted you to sing with him. And by you, I mean everyone on the planet. So we celebrate his music and his life today. And as we do that, please sing along. It's what Pete Seeger would want. And remember, as you join in singing, Pete's definition of harmony, which is any note that the person next to you is not singing. You feel more relaxed about singing already, don't you? He had an exquisite ear for harmony and melody line, and he didn't care if the rest of us didn't have exactly that same level of ability. He was just hoping for participation, that all voices be joined for the beauty of the song, for the fairness of the for all people, and for the life of this planet. You may have heard Pete Seeger tell this story. He has told it many different ways and encourages other people to tell it in their own ways. He's a believer in the folk traditions in the truest sense, which is that they change as different folks tell stories. So here is my telling of Abiyoyo. Once upon a time, there was a little boy who lived in a village, and he played the ukulele. And he went around town, plink, 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 plink. If you've had a ukulele in your house, you know it's plink, 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 plink. And all the adults said, "Oh, I'm trying to get some work done. Will you please go play somewhere else?" So he would go somewhere else, plink, 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 plink. And the adults would say, "Oh, you are in my way. I'm trying to get some work done." And to make matters worse, his father was a magician. With a magic wand, he could make things disappear. Zoop, zoop. And he was kind of a practical joker, which meant that he would see someone taking a nice drink of cold water, and he would walk up, zoop, zoop, and the glass would disappear. And he would see someone working hard, sawing some logs, and he would walk up, zoop, zoop, and the saw would disappear. He would see someone sitting down after a long day of work, zoop, zoop, the chair would disappear. So between the ukulele and the magic wand, the people in the town said, "The two of you, get out of here. Take your magic wand, take your ukulele." And they sent them to live on the edge of town. Well, in the same town, they told stories from a long time ago that there used to be a monster, Abiyoyo. And he was as big as a house, and he could eat people alive. No one believed the stories, but they told them just the same. And then, one morning, the sun rose blood red over the hills, and the people woke, and they could see a figure in front of the sun. The ground shook as that figure moved over the hills. Women screamed, and strong men fainted because it was Abiyoyo. He stomped into the sheep pasture, and he picked up a sheep. Hoo! He ate it whole. And then he went to the cow pasture, picked up a cow, and ate the cow whole. And then he turned his head toward town. The people screamed, "Run for your lives!" They fell over each other, trying to hide in cellars and get into the woods. Just then, the boy and his father woke up. They must have been at a party the night before. They'd been sleeping in. And the boy said, "Pa, what's that?" And his father rubbed his eyes and said, "Oh, that's Abiyoyo. If only I could get him to lie down, I could get him to disappear." "Well, let's go," the boy said, and he grabbed his dad's hand, and his dad grabbed his magic wand, and the boy grabbed the ukulele, and they ran toward Abiyoyo. And the people said, "Don't go there, he'll eat you alive." But they ran right up to the monster. And the monster looked down, lifted up his great big paws. He had long fingernails because he never cut them. And they had these big slobbery teeth because he never brushed them. And he had this matted hair because he never combed it. And he had stinky feet because he never washed them. So he lifted up those great big claws, and the boy started to play the ukulele. Plink, plink, plink. Ah, bi-yo-yo. Ah, bi-yo-yo. Well, this monster had never heard anyone sing a song about him before. He was delighted, and he put down his claws and kind of grinned, and the little boy kept playing, ah, bi-yo-yo, ah, bi-yo-yo, and the monster started to dance. Ah, bi-yo-yo, ah, bi-yo-yo, ah, bi-yo-yo, ah, bi-yo-yo. And the boy kept playing faster and faster and faster, and the monster kept dancing and dancing and faster and faster. He got out of breath, and he was huffing and puffing, ah, bi-yo-yo, ah, bi-yo-yo. And finally, the monster just fell down on the ground, exhausted, and zoop, zoop. Ah, bi-yo-yo disappeared. Well, the people in the town came streaming out of their houses and came running out of the woods. He's gone! He's gone! They rushed up to the boy and his father. They put them up on their shoulders, and they said, "Come back to town and bring your darn ukulele and your magic wand. We don't care anymore." And they all went back to town singing, "Ah, bi-yo-yo, ah, bi-yo-yo, ah, bi-yo-yo, bi-yo-yo-yo-yo, ah, bi-yo-yo, bi-yo-yo-yo-yo." This reading is really a piece of a transcript of when I think Pete Seeger met one of the monsters of our American culture. Pete Seeger, like many artists and public people, was brought before the House Un-American Activities Committee in the 1950s. Has anyone here heard that testimony or heard any? Few of you have. This is a little excerpt because I think it's good to hear how he spoke to the abioyo of that moment. And I also think that some of our fourth graders have recently been to the State House, so they know some hands in the back there. They know what it means to be in one of these government buildings and see official people and maybe be in conversation, and that it can be a little bit intimidating. There are two people questioning Pete Seeger in this transcript, and for our purposes, I'm going to blur them into one voice because they are one voice. The questioner: "When and where were you born, Mr. Seeger?" "I was born in New York in 1919. "What is your profession or occupation?" "Well, I have worked at many things, and my main profession is a student of American folklore, and I make my living as a banjo picker, sort of damning in some people's opinion." "Has New York been your headquarters for a considerable period of time?" "No, I lived there only rarely until I left school, and after that, a year or two, I was living there after World War II, and then I went back to the country where I've always felt more at home." "You say you were in the armed forces of the United States?" "About 3 years, 3.5 years. "Will you please tell us the period of your service?" "I went in July 1942, and I mustered out in December 1945. Mr. Seeger, prior to your entry in the service in 42, were you engaged in the practice of your profession in the area of New York?" "It's hard to call it a profession. I kind of drifted into it, and I never intended to be a musician. I'm glad I am now. It's a very honorable profession. But I actually started out, and I wanted to be a newspaperman. And when I left school..." "Will you answer the question, please?" "I have to explain that it really isn't my profession. I picked up a little change in it." "Did you practice your profession?" "I sang for people, yes, before World War II and also as early as 1925. Which is when he would have been 6. "And upon your return from the service in December of 45, you continued in your profession. I continued singing, and I expect I always will. The committee has information obtained in part from the Daily Worker, which is a communist magazine or a newspaper, indicating that over a period of time, especially since December 1945, you took part in numerous entertainment features. And I have before me a photostatic copy of June 20th, 1947. I won't read all of that for you. But they want to know if he was part of the Communist Party. And Mr. Seeger says, "Sir, I refuse to answer that question, whether it is a quote from the New York Times or the Vegetarian Journal. I don't believe there is any more authoritative document in regard to the Communist Party than the official organ, the Daily Worker." And the co-questioner corrects him. He hasn't answered the question, and he has merely said that he wouldn't answer whether the article appeared in the New York Times or some other magazine. Pete Seeger is then directed to answer the question. And he says, "Sir, the whole line of questioning. You have only been asked one question so far." And then he gives the answer that he gives for the rest of the interview. "I'm not going to answer any questions as to my association, my philosophical or religious beliefs, or my political beliefs, or how I voted in any election, or any of these private affairs. I think these are very improper questions for any American to be asked, especially under such compulsion as this. I would be very glad to tell you of my life if you want to hear of it." And that is the answer he gave to almost every question they asked him, except that he offered a number of times to sing for the committee. And they declined each time. Perhaps they were uneasy about what those songs might do. Pete Seeger's concerts were always about folks singing, not just him singing, though he certainly did. For quite a few decades anyway, he sang. But he wasn't satisfied unless everyone was singing. And he always spent a little bit of time teaching, I was about to say congregation, his audience how to sing, and then he always let them relax about it, either by sharing his definition of harmony or saying, "There is no wrong note as long as you are singing." And it seems to me that in his presence, people believed that for that hour or two of the concert. He thought all songs could be changed to suit the moment and the people who were singing them, that people should participate in a song by making it their own. And in that way, I think he made of his music and all music an offering for the world, an offering for hopes for peace, an offering for human justice and for environmental well-being. We immerse ourselves in his music today in part to be reminded to make our own lives offerings to the world, offerings of possibility for tomorrow. In recent years, when Pete Seeger had lost a lot of his singing voice, he put out, I think, several more albums. Actually, and one of them was he sang with a choir, and really the choir did the singing. Sorry you didn't get a chance to sing with Pete. Pete Seeger started his musical life playing the ukulele, so I suspect it is not an accident that in the version of Abby Yo-Yo that he created and told, the little boy played the ukulele. But it wasn't long before he met a five-string banjo, and that's the instrument that he spent the rest of his life with. He played the guitar and probably a number of other things, but it's that banjo that you probably picture him with. And you may picture him with one written on the round drum, "This machine surrounds hate and forces it to surrender." Of course, he had several versions of that same banjo over the years because he played the banjo for, I think, 8 decades. He He played that banjo in Union Halls. He played it for the Civil Rights Movement. He played it while sailing down the Golden River, the Hudson, in a boat named the Clearwater, as he sang to save the earth. He didn't play it while he marched with the Occupy movement in New York City because he needed canes in both hands then to stay steady and keep walking with the crowd, but in his heart he had his banjo. Pete Seeger told goofy stories and he sang silly songs right along with the tragic ballads and the rousing songs of activism. They were all the same to him, I think. Songs of the people. Songs and stories of the people that had a power that he wanted to preserve and enrich and, I think, remind us of. As he told the House on Un-American Activities, he was a collector of American folklore and folkways of the world, and he was pretty sure that the folk is where the answer was. That story, Abi Yo-Yo, is based on a South African song and story. He learned the song, and there was just a little scrap of a story with the song, so he created a much bigger story to go with it. And he did that in the world. He went and found stories and songs and scraps of stories and scraps of songs. He looked for the ones that were by anonymous. And he brought them back to life and gave them to all of us again. And he believed in rewriting songs, reimagining them so that they would be alive in the present. And that's what he meant by participation. That we participate in the creation of the world all the time. Whether it's a song we sing, a story we tell, a civil right that we march for, people who we take into our lives and love, or a river we reclaim from pollution or dams in our town. In one interview, Pete Seeger shows both his fear for the planet and his persistent hope. He said, if there is a human race here 100 years from now, it's because hundreds of millions of people realized that they needed to start right in their own neighborhoods. I am struck always by how little fear Pete Seeger seemed to have. Clearly he had some. But he stood up in front of thousands of people for the last 10 or 15 years and led them in singing, although he could no longer sing himself. And in the 50s, he acted like a magician playing a practical joke in front of the House Committee on Un-American Activities. It's so clear that he had no respect for what they were doing. And he wasn't unpleasant to them about it. He just was fearless. So I try to live up to Pete in that way just a little bit. Do things even if I think they seem a little risky, including be hopeful that we participate more deeply in our own lives, that we make more possible in our world. I read you this quote from Pete Seeger a few months ago, and maybe I'll just keep reading it every couple of months. Through the years, Pete Seeger remained determinedly optimistic, saying, "The key to the future of the world is finding the optimistic stories and letting them be known."